Thank you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. Listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. used to feed pigs. The UK's National Pig Association is warning of a, quote, unavoidable global bacon shortage.
Oh, but not really. The British Pork Industry Group is really just asking British consumers to pay more for their bacon today so that next year farmers can pay higher costs of feed so they can have more bacon tomorrow.
So we can't blame any of this on global warming?
The drought, yes. Baconpocalypse, no.
Cool. Bring on the global warming. For more on that story and all of those we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. And remember, you can download us anytime on iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio, follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report, and find us and like us on the Facebook. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Just eat it.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, then. I am Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. God, this picture of the psychopathic Bibi Netanyahu. Is certainly getting around. You know, he brought his red crayon with him to the UN, not because the Mossad had already used up the purple ones and the green ones and the yellow ones and the orange ones and the black ones and the white ones and the flesh ones. I never did understand the Crayola crayon called flesh. They mercifully got rid of that after a while because there weren't even white people that color. No, he brought his red crayon with him to the United Nations because he wants the world to draw a red line. Isn't he clever? Oh, I wonder when he takes it back to Tel Aviv if his mom will put that up on the refrigerator, his little drawing of the bomb. That was the gist of what he had to say. By the way, did the Iranian delegation walk out on Bibi Netanyahu the way the Israeli delegation walked out on Ahmadinejad? I don't know. He said it was getting... It is late, very late. Stop Iran. And then the way the Associated Press says it, he flashed a diagram. No, that's not a diagram, Associated Press! That's a picture of a bowling ball bomb, you know, the kind that, yes, Boris and Natasha used on Bullwinkle. Iran is 70% of the way there and well into the second stage. By next summer, at current enrichment rates, they will have finished the medium enrichment and moved to the final stage. From there, it is only a few more weeks before they have enriched enough for a bomb. Get me a grain alcohol and rainwater, Mandrake, and whatever it is you want to drink. You know I only drink grain alcohol and rainwater because fluoride, Mandrake, fluoride. The Iranians are trying to sap our precious bodily fluids. You know, the trouble when you get to, the point you have as much power as a Bibi Netanyahu does, nobody looks at you anymore and says, you're nuts. You're just crazy. Take a pill. Smoke this. Have a drink. Lighten up. Go dancing. Do something. Nobody says that. Now, I believe that faced with a clear red line, Iran will back down. It will give more time for sanctions and diplomacy. Red lines don't lead to war. Red lines prevent war. Nothing could imperil the world more than a nuclear-armed Iran. Really? Could it imperil the world as much as a nuclear-armed Israel? I mean, just asking. Assuming, of course, that Iran actually wants a nuclear weapon. And why would you? I mean, I wish they didn't want nuclear power. The rest of the world's going away from it, and they're going toward it. Yeah, come on, guys. Wind, solar. Really? A country with one or two nuclear devices is going to roll the dice against a country that has 200? I don't see it. I mean, we've been down this historical road before, and there are those who have a better grasp on it than I. But for heaven's sakes, did we start World War III with the Soviet Union the instant that they developed a bomb? You know, at that point in time, we had them outgunned, probably at about the same, more than the same degree than Israel has Iran outgunned. No, we had us a Cold War in which we tried really hard not to have World War III. And so far, we haven't had World War III, although Bibi Netanyahu seems to have a real itch for it. Red line. Oh, such a clever boy. Sheesh. Hey, this is cool. We are $20 toward the $50 that in matching funds for Betsy's first paycheck challenge. Kate writing in, Betsy, Mazel Tov. Congratulations. You rock, sister. I'm proud to send 10. Now we need four more. Actually, Kate, we need three because we got another one before you. Kate asks, what grades are you teaching? They are so fortunate to have you. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Both lines ring into the same 7-year-old system that is mercifully holding up. You know, this thing got hit by lightning within the first year. It was kind of a booger. But it was, it's held up. Cross your fingers. They both ring into the same place, so light them up now. It is far easier for us to have conversation radio in the next hour and 41 minutes than it is in the last 10 of the program. Right? Yeah. So we will go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Dave overlooking the Pacific Ocean here up in Northern California.
Sounds beautiful, Dave.
Yeah, it is. It's another beautiful day. We've been getting more than our fair share. And the issue that's been kind of on my mind, I just had a small letter to the editor published in the Humboldt State University paper yesterday. That's the HSU paper here. It's the Lumberjack. And the issue that I've been concerned about, the corrupt, greedy, power-mad folks have taken over our government.
They have.
Mostly by cheating. That's my view. And
no, that's how they operate.
Yeah. And having gotten it, they did all kinds of things in our name, and among them was invading countries that did nothing to us to deserve to be invaded, but they were very profitable for certain corporations, Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Halliburton and Standard Oil and all. They profited greatly. So we got in wars. Otherwise, I don't know any reason why we did it other than that it was profitable then. So I think a lot of the people started feeling this is unacceptable, not in our name, and wanted to stand up to it, and that's when I think the Occupy happened a year ago. And it started like a bang, but it's been contained. It has been rendered less than really effective.
And I think for a variety of reasons. And I think there's probably, Dave, more than a little bit of fact-based data in your allegations. I go if you were to dig back into the archives, which folks are free to do, you would find during Occupy that there were some concerns manifested on this program about the co-option of Occupy. And, of course, one of the first groups to get out there and try to co-opt Occupy, and as I understand it from our buddy Andy, I mean, it was not too far from you, there was some success. One of the first groups of people to try to co-opt Occupy were the Paulistas, the Rand Paul people. And then there was a massive media filth torrent that was generated against Occupy, of course, led by Radio Rwanda, Fox News. Oh, you mean Rapeupy, huh? All those Occupy rapes? Oh, they were probably perpetrated by the new Black Panther Party. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, and there was at least one other thing that I saw happening right before my eyes a number of times, and we decided we were not going to have designated leaders, per se. So, in the absence of a leader, a number of people that really were kind of a hollow drum said, okay, then I will be the leader, follow me. Well, there had to be a better way than that to arrive at who would be our best voice to be out front. Because often we ended up with the hollow, loud drum and the people not knowing what to do, or which way to turn, to follow, and whatnot. So that happened to us. We had to find a way to deal with that. But I think there were those clearly who wanted it not to succeed. The people were not supposed to have that kind of a voice, that kind of a power, and not be able to stand up to a corrupt government. And so it got infiltrated. There were people that were there to make sure that it didn't work. They did their part.
And you know, that's in a way, that's the measure of the potential for success of something like an Occupy or any movement, that the other side will do everything in their power to defeat it before it can get a good foothold. Now I think there are other discussions to be had. Dave, you were talking about, you know, there were decisions made that it was going to be leaderless. And that's, you know, that's a fear-based response to what the power elite tend to do to leaders of movements. We have Gandhi to look at historically. We have Dr. King to look at historically. And we have Jesus. We have Socrates. All of whom were leaders of a movement of one sort or another that the power structure took out as an attempt to defeat the movement. So that's, you know, that is certainly not ill-conceived or ill-contemplated. But the problem is, and I think this is just a function of group dynamics, leaders emerge, whether we like it or not. I've witnessed some of that in the stuff that I'm involved in. We had the acknowledged leader of our struggle against mountaintop removal. One of the leaders died a couple of years ago, Judy Bonds, dear friend of mine. And here a couple of weeks ago, another of the elders, the leaders of this struggle, Larry Gibson, dropped dead of a heart attack while cutting brush on the little bit of hilltop that he had saved. And in those moments, vacuums develop. But they develop because the leadership was there in the first place, and the leadership developed because leaders cannot help but be leaders. Some of them, as you note, Dave, are hollow drums. Some of them, though, are real leaders.
On your chat room, I have chosen the nick of Bertrand Russell as one of my heroes, and certainly somebody that's taken a lot of gall to have come up with that. He was not a hollow drum. He was one with a good deal of wisdom, somebody that a lot of us have gotten behind for many years since. You knew that I was Bertrand Russell on your chat room, I think.
Right, yes, I did.
Okay.
I kind of guessed it when I saw you talking about electronic voting machines.
Yeah, okay. Well, it troubles me that right now in our own county courthouse here, we've had people by the dozens showing up, standing there with signs, with candles, with tents, with tables, whatever we could, trying to draw attention to the fact that not in our name, the world can't wait, whatever, you know, we need something done to end the outrages that are going on in government today. And they had to come up with regulations quickly, that they call them the urgent resolutions, to restrict it. We could only be there at certain times, under certain conditions, certain spacing between each other. We could not hang any sign. We had to hold them.
So, and some, you know, some of those, I think, could be subject to appropriate legal challenges. And we understand that, you know, the legal system, despite what any right-winger says, Dave, is always conservative. There's no such thing as a liberal court, because courts are designed to protect the status quo. However, having said that, you know, there are some things with regard to free speech, like yelling fire in a crowded theater, like deliberately inciting people to go and do violence, which an organized society generally tends to think are beneficial to the greater good of the whole, not necessarily just the money. On the other hand, so things like things that are referred to as time, place, and manner restrictions often survive legal scrutiny. Other things, for instance, a blanket statement of, you can't protest here at all, ever, no how, no way. Those are called prior restraints. And those things are subjected to the highest level of constitutional scrutiny and frequently fail. So, you know, one of the things that perhaps we forget is that good movements need good lawyers. As much as popular as it is to slam lawyers, lawyers provide a vital service. You know, everybody likes to quote that line from one of the Shakespeare plays, "The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers." I'm sure you've heard it. Many others have as well. But very few people, in quoting that, know whose mouth that statement is put in. That assertion, "first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers," is put in the mouth of someone who would like to set up a dictatorship.
Well, we have the Constitution, so we don't have to be so much a lawyer, because we're dealing with one that seems to be pretty obvious for all citizens, and that is that no laws shall be made restricting the freedom of speech, freedom of assembly of the people. And, you know, that may not include the right to scream fire in the theater, but we're a long way from that. We believe we have every right to show up before any government building with our sign and our tents and our tables and lanterns and, you know, candles, whatever, to draw attention to the issue that we have, and that they do not have the right under the Constitution to set any kind of parameters, rules, or say...
But you know, a couple of hundred years, or more particularly 100 years of constitutional decisions say that the government does, operating in the name of the people, does have the right to establish some parameters. Not all parameters, and they cannot be, and they will, they're not held to be presumptively right on all counts. Like I said, things like prior restraints are subjected to the highest level of scrutiny, and the court, according to its decisional history, is supposed to have to look at such things with a very jaundiced eye. To impede the free flow of traffic, to mess with holy commerce, and commerce is sacred in this nation. We both know that. Make it impossible to go to work. Those things will also be looked at with a jaundiced eye.
Well, their only real concern was that people joined in with this movement that really were not so much a part of the cause as they saw a place where they could camp out and people would deliver free food.
Right, and you know, that's in a nation that gives not a tinker's damn for its hungry and suffering, that's a dynamic that can be counted upon. If there's food to be had, hungry people will come to the food.
Yeah. Right. And a place to be able to spend the night without being harassed by the police, too.
or harassed, beaten, or killed by anybody else for that matter. Absolutely. And those are used as excuses for putting down the rest of the movement. I mean, this is a society for good or ill that is founded upon allegedly democratic principles, though it is no democracy. That is founded on democratic principles, are rooted in protecting the status quo and the money.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't want to tie you up too long, and I do appreciate the time you grant to your callers, but I really feel that this is a right that needs to be protected above all others.
Absolutely.
Are the last recourse of power, and if the government decides to act to our detriment because big special interests are putting money in their pocket and wanting them to behave, you know, they're not just looking for good government. When Halliburton puts money in your pocket, they want you to do their bidding for them.
Right.
No other way to
look. Well, that's very true, Dave, and that goes back to something I was saying the other night. You know, we talk about how we'd like to have public financing of electoral campaigns, of political campaigns, and I think it would be we would wind up with manifestly better candidates in the long run. The problem, though, is that, you know, look at the for-profit media. Every 2 and every 4 years, they get a giant windfall of free money. Now, who in the for-profit media, therefore, are going to give a fair assessment of the need for publicly financed political campaigns and getting the filthy money out of the political process? Why are they going to cut their own economic throats? Because that's what they would be doing, you know. Because all of a sudden you wouldn't have the Sheldon Adelsons of the world pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into campaigns. This is going to wind up being the most expensive and a multi-billion dollar political process this year. And almost every last penny of that is going to go into the pockets of corporate-owned media conglomerates. I can't stress that strongly enough.
We have so much to lose. I do think we've got to try to hang on to and protect what we have of that right to stand up and say, you don't get to do that to us, the people, those of us that have...
Right, because our people freedom of speech is already deemed subservient to the corporate money-driven freedom of speech. Pretty soon there will be nothing left but corporate freedom of speech. And that is greatly to be feared, Dave.
Thank you for all that you do, Bob. I hope you'll be able to stay with it.
We're trying, Dave. Thank you very kindly, and enjoy your lovely evening there on the Pacific Coast.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye now. Our long-time buddy Dave calling from Northern California. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, this is Jeff from Steeler Country.
Oh, hey, Jeff. How you doing?
Well, I could be better.
Well, if you're a Steelers fan, you definitely could be better.
Yeah, but the reason I had to call is I nodded off after dinner, and I woke up, and there was the local CBS News, and there's Benny Netanyahu on the TV with his stupid bomb diagram. And did you notice the marks on the bomb were 70% and 90%?
Yes, I did notice.
All right. Well, there's not a national intelligence estimate or an IAE or EA report that show Iran enriching uranium past 20%. And it's like, this is just, you know, throwing the big fear factor into the whole damn thing.
Well, it is, if I dare use the phrase, a lie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's why I tried to draw the distinction back to Colin Powell with his grainy flyover photos. You know, that, too, was just a big stinking lie. And that's what Bibi Netanyahu did today at the UN. He got up and lied to the whole blessed world. And, you know, counterpoint that or counterpose that with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who got up in front of the whole world and talked about religious horseshit.
Yeah, well, he was certainly a lot calmer and tamer than he's been in the past, but, you know, still, I mean, Iran's not nuts. They're not insane. They're not suicidal. Why in the hell would they even think about getting a bomb unless it was for self-defense? Just like, you know, everything that Saddam Hussein did before we invaded, you know, he was just trying to, you know, shore up his national support to avoid being invaded, you know. And for Christ's sakes, even if Ahmadinejad and Iran decided to develop a nuclear weapon, they'd be suicidal to use it.
That seems to be lost on so many people because the for-profit media have done a magnificent job of painting Iran as an entire nation composed entirely of crazy people. You know, it's not just Ahmadinejad, and it's not just the imams and the ayatollahs. Oh, hell no. They're all nuts. You know, the little girls swinging back and forth on the swing sets, they're crazy, too. They're just all crazy.
Well, you know, I can't believe we've bought into this pissing contest with them since 1979. You know, it's like...
Well, but if you want to be honest about it, Jeff, we've been in this pissing contest with them since 1952.
Yeah, well, we started it then.
Right. I mean, we peed first.
Yeah, and, you know, they're not going to forget it. I mean, I put a post up onto you today, you know, trying to relate some of the history about, you know, our involvement in other countries, and especially in the Middle East, and people just don't seem to remember. If for God's sake, you know, there are history books. Read them. Try and understand them.
Oh, you'd have to be able to find them first. I mean, I guess that's a little bit jaded on my part, Jeff, but let's see, history books. Is that back behind the Left Behind series?
No. I guess you'd actually have to find a local library that's open anymore.
Well, there's that, and... Hey. It's almost unbearable because I know what the stakes are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like something that Ron and Raleigh just wrote in. He said, so the scenario is that the wild-eyed pistol wavers in Iran are going to build their one nuke, mount it on the back of a donkey, and send it off with an old alarm clock timer to blow up Israel. They're so crazy that they don't believe that they would be blown into a greasy spot by the insane Bibi Netanyahu, the man that sent the murderers of the IDF to rappel onto the deck of a ship in international waters, can you say piracy, kill some of the passengers, including a U.S. citizen. These people are our allies because of a horrible incident that happened over a half century ago. It's time we step back and reassess this relationship.
Oh, definitely.
And of course, you know, in trying to analyze what appears to be an entirely lunatic situation, I suspect that there are very sane motives behind some of this somewhere, and you know that old Latin phrase, cui bono.
Bono, yes.
To whom the benefit? To whom the good? Jim, for instance, noting that Iran wishes to draw the Russians. And he says, good luck, who knows?
Well, you know, if people keep making all of these really off-the-wall, off-the-cuff statements about the USSR being our major ally or adversary in the world.
Yeah, thanks, Willard.
Who knows?
Right. But there will be, if there is some sort of conflict, horrible though it will be, bloody though it will be, murderous though it will be, Jeff, if there's some sort of conflict in Iran, somebody's going to get rich. And the thing is, I suspect, you know, trying to do my Sherlock Holmes best, that if we go and we find out who's going to get rich out of it, we might find out why they want it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I keep trying, every time I get into a discussion about issues like this with people I talk to, I always say my favorite line is, when we quit pissing in other people's sandboxes, maybe we won't have so many enemies.
Yeah, that's just like all French and surrendery, though, isn't it?
No. I think we're all part of the same world, and, you know, we can either screw it up together or try and find a way to live together.
I'd like to think so.
Definitely.
But it's... But, I mean, I've had that same conversation. I keep asking people, I say, you know, can we talk about, instead of just talking about Iran in terms of crazy people, can we talk about Iran in terms of geography? Can we get a map for this? And then you say, oh, look, okay, so here's Iran, and there's Russia, and they've got nuclear weapons, and they share a border with Iran. And, oh, looky here, here's Pakistan not very far away, and they've got nuclear weapons, and they're a kind of Muslim that absolutely hates the kind of Muslims that are in Iran. And looky over here. Here's Israel. They're not Muslim at all, and they despise the Iranians. They're still, there are segments of the Israeli population that are still pissed off over the Babylonian exile, for Christ's sakes.
Well, you can go beyond that. I mean, you know, you look at the map and you look at where we have U.S. installations around Iran, we've got them surrounded.
Right. And, well, and then you look at, and oh my goodness gracious, over here, let's not forget about India. They've got nukes coming out the gazoo. And look, down here, peaceful little Saudi Arabia, who at the mere punch of a button can get the U.S. on the blower and say, tell the typhoons to let fly a few toward Tehran. And if the right guy is in the Oval Office, Jeff, it'll happen. You know, the right guy being, say, for instance, Bishop Willard Romney.
Oh, Willard from Oz?
Yeah, the Willard of Oz. That thing has real sticking power, doesn't it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when that first came up the other night, somebody had posted on DU that Chris Matthews actually had said that already.
Really?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of it, but I mean.
Well, you never know. You know, it might be up on video. On.
I generally, you know, I generally credit, you know, I credit where I steal from, and I heard that first from our buddy Philip the other night.
Well, that was definitely worth the gold-plated toaster.
Absolutely, you know, with the right, exactly. Well, so we've dealt with the small stuff, Jeff. Now to the big stuff. Can the Steelers get well?
You know, honestly, I don't think so. I've been saying for years that and unless they get an offensive line that has some situational awareness, that can see what the hell's going on, open up a hole, or stop a rush, they're done.
But they had, you know, they were pretty well exposed last year, were they not? I mean, that particular problem.
Yes.
They had an off season in which to deal with that.
They've had more than one off season. I've been saying this for the last 5 years. I mean, they have a good running game, but a lot of their play choices, they're going up the middle on an early down, and nobody is opening a hole. Nobody's getting them with, you know, the running room they need, and it's like you're not going to get anywhere that way. So you know, Ben might as well throw the ball forever.
But the thing is, once other teams figure that out, then it just turns into the wonderful world of blitzes.
Yep.
And some, you know, you roll the dice and maybe you win more, you know, you win more rolls than you lose, and that's what it looks like over the beginning of the season so far.
Well, the other side of the coin is I see too many overrun tackles where even somebody like Paul Amalu he's moving so fast he can't slow down to actually make the hit, and he just grabs him by the hand, and you know, like, you're not going to stop anybody that way.
No, and he's getting older. He's not going to play forever. And I've said all along that Roethlisberger is not the heart of the Steelers. Troy Polamalu is.
At this point, I think you're right.
So I think it's going to be an interesting season, and at least we have the late breaking news last night that the refs are coming back to work.
Honest refs? Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they're union refs? Oh.
Apparently they're going to be, isn't there a Thursday night game tonight? The New York Times story I read said that they would actually be on the field this evening.
Well, I'll have to check the TV schedule.
And if that is the case, I just said this in an email with Sandra. If that's the case, Jeff, then I strongly suggest that the president of the NFL Referees Association send candy and flowers to Chris Carter and Steve Young.
Well,
because they had as much to do with it as that blown call on Sunday night did, especially Steve Young saying they don't care, and Chris Carter saying, hey, protect the shield.
Well, somebody made a comment earlier in the day, I don't remember who it was or where it was, that they thought this whole thing was a power play by the owners to try and pressure the players' league, the players' union.
I think there was an element of that. It's interesting though. Apparently, this is an 8-year deal. So,
well, that sounds like a good deal for me, but.
Well, I hope the refs came out of it with what they wanted, because at this, you know, the NFL, I think Roger Goodell finally woke up and realized that this ain't working.
Well, they're ruining their whole name, it's like if the game isn't ref honestly.
Well, and the other thing, if it's really really true that there were refs from the Lingerie Football League. I mean, that's one of those moments where Roger Goodell looks up and goes, oh, that's out now. I guess we have to settle.
Well, you know, maybe the refs could have said, take off some clothes and maybe we'll look at the game.
Hey, Jeff, it's good to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you. I love you, guy.
Oh, it's awful good to hear from you. And just hang in there, because, you know, Boss Man Wayne is down here, and bad Steeler seasons make for bad days for Boss Man Wayne. You know, proud son of Al Equipa that he is.
Yeah, well, I was born up that way too. So, but it was nice to hear from Granny T last night.
Oh, isn't she wonderful?
She is a godsend.
That's one of the everybody, yourself included, makes this all just a wonderful experience for me. It's the three fastest hours in my day.
Well, I got a feel for Granny T because, you know, my whole world right now is making sure my 91-year-old mother can live more or less independently at home. And, you know, it's a bit of a strain, but damn, I couldn't think of anything else I'd rather do.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Well, thank you, Jeff, and you have a wonderful evening.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye now. Calling from the Berg, that's Jeff. We don't hear from him often, but he's always got a lot to say. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, what's happening, man?
Hey, we seem pretty obsessed with bombing and destroying the cradle of civilization, whichever way we can. We started off by bombing Babylon.
Yeah, we did a number on that. I mean, a real number.
Well, it's still in shambles. We didn't really repair a whole lot.
We parked tanks and landed helicopters in the middle of the ruins.
I know. They still have rolling blackouts 8-9 hours a day from what I hear. And now we want to go attack. I can't even think right now. I'm so mad.
Iran.
Yes, Iran. Yes, sorry. I forgot that wonderful name. But you have people like the bishop come out and say that the question you need to ask yourself is, are we better off and safer with Iran, and is there a nuclear program further ahead than it was before? And he says, and answers his own question, I think you can figure out the answer on your own. Now, he's implying that they're not further behind than they were at this time last year. They're actually a lot further behind. Actually, we've killed off their scientists and taken them out with that internet bug. They're many years behind again.
But the thing is, Jeremy, behind what?
They just want nuclear power. They don't want a bomb. I think Yes, Ahmadinejad, he's a crazy man, I'll give you that. But he's just a spokesperson. I don't think that most of Iran thinks like he does.
No, most of Iran wants to be left the hell alone, as witnessed by the woman who, as Ron and Raleigh noted, stomped a mud hole in that ridiculous cleric when he told her that her filthy bits were showing.
And good for her. I wish more women like her would do that in Pakistan, Iran, and Afghanistan. I wish they'd all do it.
I mean, what are they going to do, kill all the women folk?
If you give them time enough and they do the wrong thing, they will. I mean, for Christ's sake, or if you get raped, you get stoned.
Right.
I just think that...
Because, you know, because your nasty bits provoked the otherwise religiously pure man into a frenzy of lust. But then again, you know, and I'm not being mean or anything, Jeremy, you said over there. I mean, look, Todd Akin is back in Missouri and running hard against Claire McCaskill. And Claire McCaskill, of course, is she's no Bernie Sanders, okay? But there, you know, he's back, and this is a guy who, gave us the phrase legitimate rape. Because inherent in the idea of legitimate rape is that maybe there were too many nasty bits showing. So how far, you know, realistically, how far is Todd Akin from, say, one of these goobers walking the streets in whatever province saying, cover up thy nasty bits, woman?
He's no different. He's a fundamental Christian.
Yes.
Fundamentalists are fundamentalists time and time again, regardless of what religion it is. They all believe the same cockamamie crazy ideas.
Oh, cue the heavenly choir. Yes, it ain't the particular religion, because, you know, there are 140 IQ Muslims, 140 IQ Jews, 140 IQ Christians, 140 IQ Hindus and so forth, but Buddhists, but they are all of them vastly outnumbered by the 70 IQ practitioners of their faiths.
Oh, and believe you me, saying over there, yes, that was small-minded of me. I do believe...
Oh, I wasn't calling you down.
Oh, I realize that. I do believe we should act as a one-world unit, kind of like a UN idea once was. But, yeah, they just annoy me. They really do.
Yes, they annoy the out of me, too.
And when he isn't saying something stupid about how we should go after Iran or target us, he's asking why planes you can't roll down the windows. Because Anne couldn't breathe properly on the flight, which was probably a private jet.
It was a private charter. You know, and it's not like she flies one of those Canadair jump jets or one of those Embraer things that I take out of Charleston, West Virginia, whenever I want to go somewhere and sit quietly for an hour with my chin resting on my knees. You know, because my knees have been jammed up against my chin, not because, you know what I mean. I mean, those things are built, those little commuter jets are built by Keebler elves for Keebler elves.
Yes, I'm sure it was a Learjet. It probably was tipped out to the max for those two. Because
oh, yeah, or a Gulfstream, sure.
Right. I mean, we know she has two Cadillacs. You know what a suffrage that is. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in about us and our little Iran kick and how interested we are in bombing credibilization and the nothingness.
Right, and, you know, I think I forget who it was. It was somebody I heard on Malloy the other night who sent in this brilliant historical overview of the beginning of the troubles with Persia and pointed out something that I've known for a while that Western history doesn't like to acknowledge, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but the Greeks started the problem with the Persians. Later history would say that, you know, the Persian horde led by and subjected the blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. There was a terrorist state in the ancient world. And that terrorist state was a grouping of city-states that were looking to expand their sphere of influence. And they were the ones who needled the Persian army. And the Persian king.
I was going to say, I wish the 300 legend grew out of.
Oh, God, don't even mention that movie to me. with Xerxes, the post-punk piercing king? Oh, please.
Right, yeah.